This is tape recording number 5110C24B, FAC number 5. A tape recorded lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 24th of October, 1951. The title of this lecture is Foundation Auditor's Lecture, Part 2. It is 54 minutes and 36 seconds long. Copyright C, 1951-1974 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by the Flag Audio Unit of the Flagship Apollo of the Sea Organization. In this lecture, Ron talks about the dynamics, self-determinism, and start-change-stop. Due to an incompletely recorded master recording, this recording has a couple of small breaks in it. And now, here is L. Ron Hubbard.
A card, and there is no... I'm not going to work it up right now. But here is a basic card for an auditor, which you find very interesting. It's just the dynamics, and just your dynamics that run... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, infinity. And your center card is start, stop, change, not stop, not start, not change. I didn't add not change. These are six of them. Start, stop, change, not start, not stop, not change. For each one of the dynamics. You can think up an enormous number of situations. This isn't a complete card. There are about four other discs on it. If you can think up just out of that little center, terrific number of situations for your straight wire. You've got, for instance, the various component parts of the physical universe. Matter, energy, space, and time could go on one of the discs. Matter, energy, space, and time, organisms, and so forth. But actually, these are component parts of your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and infinity. So if you wanted to translate this card into what it's all of its component parts, you wouldn't put your dynamics down. You would just list the component parts of each dynamic. You understand? Two, that is each sex. Two. One would, of course, just be you. But you could divide it off into mind and body if you wanted to. Seven, could subdivide rather nebulously. But six goes into four categories, matter, energy, space, and time. It becomes four. Five, of course, is life, but now let's divide it up into the various kingdoms. Education, that is vegetable life, marine life, domestic animals, wild animals, game animals. So on, you get a terrific number of combinations. Now, as far as four is concerned, you can take the whole component parts of the dynamics out of four. These things which man holds to be true. As far as three is concerned, naturally, that falls apart into various types of groups, including county, state, national, social group, professional group. You've got all these various subdivisions. Now, if you wanted to list each one of these separately instead of by dynamics, you would find an enormous number of straight wires. It's just fabulous. But actually, knowing what these numbers represent, if you really know what they represent, this is an adequate card. Apropos of nothing particular, somebody asked me a question during the intermission, which I think I ought to give you an answer to. I worked out a pattern many years ago to people who started to go into the static. Only I didn't know what quite they were going into, but I knew that it wasn't good for them. So they would tell you ESP or spirit or trance and see the future, all of this sort of thing. Instead of saying, no, it isn't so or something of that sort, that's a dull way to go about it, because what does that actuate? Immediately the fellow has to invalidate you, therefore he has to accept more solidly what he has, and therefore he kind of goes down and asks me about the whole thing. If he can't accept it as solidly as he thinks he ought to, and oh boy, it's a mess. So, what you say to a person who's doing this is, yes, I know, ESP, spirit, trance, Rosicrucianism, yogism, all. Yes, sir. Of course, there is the question of whether or not it's good for you. You don't have to defend it. You can get them to back out of it, most cases. Good trick. Simply asking them, yes. It's not a question of whether or not spirits exist. It's not a question of that. It's whether or not they're good for you. And it brings in a whole new line of thinking. It gives him an eyes out. Now he must probably say RC with you because you're evidently concerned with his state of being, which is what he wanted you to be concerned with in the first place. Now, you may have thought that I was first part of today's talk rather shooting a long bow when I talk about a governor. You see, there is no particular reason why the past should affect the present. Now, you see, this has been accepted so blindly since Breuer first brought it up in about 1884, that the present could only operate well if you address the past. That it is something that is only a surface truth. Only a surface truth. The fastest route that we know of at the moment in patching up the present is to patch up the past. But look at the position on the tone scale of all of those cults, groups, studies, schools of the past. Look at where they have been on the tone scale. They were actually individuals who were wildly endeavoring to solve their own problems. They were not interested in a broad survey, most of them. They were interested in their own problems. And naturally it occurred to them that this was the way to go about it. Why? The psychotic is interested in the past. The neurotic is interested and concerned with the present. And the sane is interested with the future. Therefore, a position of a therapy on a tone scale can be estimated by its concern with one or another one of these points. When I mention to you a governor, I can tell you that it's obvious the reason way you get your data with which to compute on today is by what has happened to you yesterday. And therein lies a most horrible error. And personally, I don't think that the computer has to be liable for this error. There's a lot of yak going around on the part of men who are broken down with rheumatism and can no longer get up and fight the young men who walk into the office and demand things. The experience is the thing. What they're doing is palming off facsimiles, many of them N-theta facsimiles, as an excuse for physical disability. Just like many people drive very fancy cars, maintain enormous social activities like parties Saturday night at vast expense and $50,000 for dear little Betty's coming out party and all that sort of thing. These people may be substituting flash for or the power to buy for the power to be. You understand? People can very easily do this. A girl has no social charm. We run into some girl who has no social charm. But if she can put on a $10,000 diamond collar and a $50,000 mink coat, it excuses a lot, doesn't it? Now she doesn't have to have any social charm. Well, this is no dissertation on the subject of the rich, because Thurston Veblen and me never got along. But the point is, I'm just trying to show you, there is a physical universe item being substituted for a possible inadequacy. It isn't necessarily being substituted for the possible inadequacy, but it could be. You understand that? And very often, if you start examining people who do that, you'll find out that they are substituting for an inadequacy that they feel. Now, there it is in the physical universe. One $10,000 diamond collar, one $50,000 mink coat, substitute for, and so on. You get the idea. There's nothing wrong with $50,000 mink coat or something, but you look around you, and you will find it's very often a king. That's the closest physical universe approximation that I know of offhand in terms of good, solid, big chunks of mint, which approximates the use of a theta facsimile or an N-theta facsimile. A person will reach out and pick up these N-theta facsimiles and hold them up as an excuse for disability. They are usually dramatic experiences that they hold up. Have you ever listened to anyone talk about an operation? You've heard somebody mention an operation, I think. I understand that it has been done. Now, Mrs. Smythe, your appendix was easily the most difficult operation which I ever performed. It's a wonder that you lived through it. Like the fellow who says to you, you know, I am the deafest man in seven counties. Drama. Drama. People can't get drama or action out in the universe at large, so they try to make drama and action out of N-theta facsimiles. It's a very beautiful piece of randomity. They'll come around and they'll hand you these things. Wham! Oh, boy. Yes, I remember when Emmett Thompson was out. As a matter of fact, I bled for 4 hours. Came very close to dying. They said that was the worst tonsillectomy. You know, I conducted a survey one day, a trot poll, not a gallop. I didn't have enough space. And I conducted this poll to find out if there were any ordinary operations ever performed by anybody. I found out there weren't. So people will actually pull up N-theta facsimiles and offer them as drama. There's this thirst for experience, this thirst for motion, this thirst for adventure, and people aren't impressed with the fact that somebody had a good time in a low-tone society. This fellow says, you know, I went clear to the mountains and the moon all the way back, and I never lost a single bear. Nothing happened. We accomplished the objective perfectly. We had all of our equipment when we returned. Everybody says, how'd it go? The next fellow says, you know, we went to the mountains of the moon, and halfway there, Berry overtook us. We lay for 8 days, nobody able to move a limb in the whole camp. Jungle cats prowling all around. So on two of the bears were eaten on that occasion. He goes along like this, everybody. Gosh, drama. Because, after all, we are involved in a terrifically dramatic operation. We are alive and in motion in contest with not being in motion. And that is an interplay of drama. That's drama. So that to demonstrate drama, what you do is to demonstrate that you are still in motion, but you can skirt down towards static and come back on up again. You'll find nobody is quite as dramatic as a spiritualist. That's her drama. She knows really what she's doing. She's going down towards death. He wants to convince you that she too lives a dramatic life. She can post her motion here against the lack of motion. Life versus death, the dichotomy of all drama. Well, you're dealing with pre-clears who are pretty dramatic, ordinarily. And it may be that all we're doing is finding a good reason to let them get out of all the drama they've loaded on themselves. It may be that we're only taking them back on the time track and running them through effort until they can find an excuse which is adequate to themselves. And then they find this excuse and they become well. They find out they don't need this excuse. It may be, no matter how real experience seems to have been, that may be it. And you as an auditor should keep that in mind. Let's take it on a small level. Here's your little kid. Little kid breaks a vase. Bang. Maybe it's a vase. Costs more than $10. And bang it goes. Wise and splinters. Mama comes in. She says, you broke the vase, didn't you? He's got no out. There's the vase lying there. He's wrong. He must not be wrong. That must not be done. He can go through the widest sweep of skirting rightnesses and wrongnesses and swinging back and forth in all directions, having himself a wonderful time in life. But he mustn't ever come to the point where he says, yeah, I was wrong. So she says, now, you broke that. It'll have to come out of your allowance when you're 16 or something of the sort, because that was the present that dear Aunt Mamie gave us. And as a matter of fact, that vase was full of her dying breath. So, if this kid is going to make any recovery at all, if he stopped right there and made to be wrong, he'll find an N-theta facsimile someplace or other that prove it up. He'll probably be sick within 24 hours, 48 hours. And yet people don't remember very far back, so they don't really very often connect these things. They'll get sick or something else will happen, or he'll start saying, I am the sort of a person, very dramatic, I'm the sort of a person that breaks everything. I just can't seem to help it, trash. Well, just there's nothing you can do about me, Crash. Or you'll say, you see, I'm so feeble. But it fell. No, he's more likely to say, well, you know, if he's very young and hasn't learned yet that grown-ups are very, very crabby about what they consider reality. A great big polar bear came in through that window, which isn't open, came in through that window and jumped across the table. As he jumped across the table, I tried to stop him, but couldn't do so, and the vase fell and broke. He went out the door. He went out of it. Of course, you may try this in varying forms, and the first time he tells one of these things, he doesn't get away with it. Then he'll try some other thing, and he finds out about the only thing that's acceptable is nothing big and adventurous like a polar bear jumping in the window. That's nice and adventurous. And him standing there, small, brave, braving it all, you know. And the polar bear jumped through, and did he flinch? No, no, he didn't flinch. He tried to grab the polar bear, so the polar bear would not knock over the vase. But the polar bear knocked it over. Well, he did the best he could.
You just look at guys, they'll do this.
But it's awfully early in life, and it'll break down pretty quickly. And a very short space of time, they will be finding out that there is only one excuse which is acceptable. It's not the great, big, adventurous lie. It is the acceptable lie of, I'm sick, weak, small, and need care. Poor little me. I dare say you can't go back on the track of any pre-clip without finding the time when they wish they were dead. They were little kids. They go around gloomy, they think about it for a while, and they do the most beautiful job of getting up a flock of tears up. They think of themselves lying there in the coffin. All the things people would say to them, around them, how sorry everybody was that they had treated them that way, so on. I brought into a little kid sitting on a curbstone, tears rolling down his cheeks. He said, what's the matter, son? And sometimes kids tell me the truth. And he said, well, I was just thinking how beautiful it all was, the funeral. I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, I understand thoroughly. It satisfied him a great deal, and he went on crying some more. Wonderful. He was having his own funeral. Drama. For instance, why does anybody read the trash that's put out these days of literature? I said, advisedly, I put quite a bit out loud myself. But there's about five or six college boys perennially graduate and are hired by a certain publisher to be a guy by the name of Ellery Queen. And this character, Ellery Queen, carries the banner on his own books and also is his own hero. Death, and it's all mysterious, and he's shaving the corners. And people buy these things, and they sit down and they read them. And they're willing to accept this as reality. Then somebody comes along from the field of criminology, and he takes a snide look at these detective stories, and he says, you know, he says, those don't compare with reality. And he thinks that this is something wrong. The one thing you mustn't do when you're writing is ever compare anything to reality. Somebody writes in, he says, but I can't understand why you rejected my story because every word of it's true. That's the exact reason why it was rejected. It takes an aesthetic interplay of this life versus death proposition in order to get people alerted to the situation. And in a society which is so narrow-minded as to insist that no polar bears can jump through unopened plate glass windows, there's only one thing left. There's the reality of sickness. There's the reality of accidents. But how real are those? How real are they? You find before every accident that anybody gets into a decision to have it. That's a heck of a thing, isn't it? Little boy gets slapped by a school teacher. 3 days later, we find him falling off the top of the chute and busting his arm. Isn't that interesting? We find every single success brings about a tendency to continue in the direction of success. But these various failures bring about a tendency to continue in the direction of failure in every single bit of it self-determined. Isn't that horrible? What a guy does to himself. But there's drama. One is going to be alive, one tries to be alive at the greatest possible level of life. So when we go back into a pre-cleared path, it may be that we are only trying to find a good excuse for him. One that he'll is perfectly willing to get away with. One that you, as the auditor, are willing to accept. A computation which looks sufficiently balanced to account for his being in the state that he's in. And you see, if you're not willing to accept the state that he's in, if you're not willing to accept it, and you just bluntly keep kicking it back at him, he'll get in tougher shape. But there is an interesting upper attitude. The higher reaches of ARC are very inexorable. He's going to get well, running this stuff out, make it all set. Horrible stuff happened to him. Terrible incidents. This is gruesome, but we're going to fix him up. It's inexorable that he'll get well. That's all. You as an auditor following along this kind of an attitude, the guy comes in and he says to him, I don't think I'll ever be the same again, and that sort of thing. You see, if your attitude says, you're going to get well, there isn't any doubt about it. The unfortunate thing about it is you walked in the door, and that was your first mistake. You walked in the door, and your second mistake is lying on the couch, and your third mistake is trying to tell me, because now you're done for. You're going to get well, and it's tough. Of course, you don't say it in these words, but that's more or less your attitude. Yes, yes, well, you're sure. Now, you've got to add something else to it. This isn't sympathy. This isn't sympathy. Sympathy is, you poor fellow. Now the guy's getting some ARC, and he's sort of getting paid for his N-theta facsimiles, and he doesn't want to get rid of those. Now, you say, boy, those were horrible things that have happened to you. My gosh, that's pretty bad. You certainly must be a tough guy to have lived through all of that. This kind of an attitude, of course, you couldn't. Well, actually, that stuff was completely adequate to account for your present state. My gosh, that stuff was completely adequate to account for it. It's a wonder to me that you're still alive, that you could totter in that door. Of course, unfortunately, this year's going to get well. But it's a wonder to me that you're here. Why, you've been through hell. Fellow says, gosh, you have. Yeah, it'll be tough. Yeah. All of a sudden, he begins to think this and that over. He will turn up past failures for you with rapidity. But you want the most dramatic one that you can get, not on the delusion side, but on the actual side. You want the central computation of the case. You will get it as fast as he feels that you're willing to accept it as it, and that you will accept it on the basis of, well, you give me that, you'll get well. And it was quite adequate that you got sick because that happened. You get that kind of a state of mind. It is quite adequate. There isn't any doubt. There isn't any wonder that you're sick, having had all this happen to you. And it is a horrible experience, but I am going to get you over it, and there's nothing you can do about my getting you over it. That's because you came in, and that means that you were determined to get over it, and your self-determinism entered in. You can prove this to him by just proving up his self-determinism. Proving to him it's self-determinism. You start proving that. You could also prove to him that the reason he's flying on your couch right now is because of his own self-determinism. He wants to do that. So therefore, he wants to get over it. He wants to get well. But you haven't got any. You know very well that that's why he's sick. You agree with him. But you only agree with what he tells you. If he tells you this is it, this is it. No monkey business about it. Don't contradict him. It may be that as we go along the line, as we isolate this little mechanical gimmick that's left, how does the fellow put himself back up to sea? How can we do that rapidly? Maybe all we'll have to do is merely account for the fellow as to why it's down in sea, so he can then put immediately back up to sea. Bing, bing. It might be that simple, you see. But if you think you're going to get rid of every N-theta facsimile that an individual has as a facsimile, there aren't that many years stretching between here and the creation of the universe way back then. I mean, you just have to work too long, that's all. The most you're going to do for a pre-clear is get rid of a few N-theta facsimiles for him. You're going to get rid of a few, and you're going to knock out his conclusions for him. This is what you're going to do for him. Now, the one thing that you could do wrong is to let him get into an N-theta facsimile that he wants to keep very badly because it was survival of some sort or other, and then not let him get all the effort out of it so that he can't keep it. You get the idea. You can leave these N-theta facsimiles with effort on them, and you can leave enough effort on his ability to hold on to them so that he can continue to use them. Now, actually, I'm being very brutal on individuals when I tell you that what's wrong with them. You've got this mechanism, this beautiful mechanical setup that individuals use. They have used it without understanding it. They at first used it a little bit, and then the mechanism swamped them. Now they're trying to fight their way through this morass, and naturally, to admit they were wrong in the first place, to wish such things on themselves, that's not good. Not good. So you've got to unburden it to a point where they can suddenly say, yeah, that's it. That is your course and process of processing. The rehabilitation of self-determinism of an individual. This is done by picking up his erroneous conclusions, getting out enough N-theta facsimiles to demonstrate to him that he had adequate reason for this, getting those facsimiles out of the road. You know, an individual, theoretically, only, can be at a point where he could just jettison them all without touching the test. Without touching any one of them, he could just jettison all of them. Bing. That's the button you're looking for. That's what I'm talking about when I say the governor. All he's got to do is start traveling at a different velocity. Start traveling at 20 all of a sudden on the tone scale. And boom! They're all gone. They will be gone. Now, where's the button? Where's 20? Now, next to that, the way you get him up to speed is to pick out all his conclusions, because you're inevitably going to pick out conclusions, decisions, which were downspeed decisions. You see how that would be? You're going to pick up. It's something as though an individual is in this static all the time and just changes its speed vector and handles the physical universe by doing so. Now, the horrible thing that happens to individuals is they don't have this understanding of things that hasn't been proven to them as this is, because it's hard to prove this to them because you're going up against the necessity of the individual to be right. As a result, he started this very early. He's gotten a lot of N-theta facsimiles. He's pulled them all in on top of him. And now all of a sudden he gets so bewildered he doesn't know which is him and which is N-theta facsimiles or anything else. You as an auditor can straighten it out for him. You can straighten it out for him. Now here is a rote therapy. By rote. One. Make an estimate for where your pre-clear is on the tone scale. Two. Estimate what N-theta facsimile he's in. In terms of years and type. Years and type. And that's probably present life. Assume that it's present life. Because the one that will have the most effect upon him will be present life. He wiped out all his sins by getting killed in the last life anyhow. Now you get that second one. You just estimate it. I'll tell you how you do some of these things in a minute. The third is to pick up, start, stop, and change lock on the third dynamic. Particularly pertinent to talking, walking, having pleasure, and having pain. Now you can pick up a few of those. Now take another look at your preclear. This is diagnosis by obvious error. Diagnosis by obvious error. What's wrong with you? You know what's wrong. You just look him over. Is he too thin? Is he too fat? Does he wear glasses? Is his hearing a little bit off? Is his speech as smooth as it should be? Is there anything wrong with his teeth? Has there been anything wrong with his teeth in the past? Take a look at his stomach. Muscular tonus good on his stomach or not? Or her stomach? On a woman, look for the extra fat back of the ankle. Look at her hastily. The extra fat on the back of the ankle, so on, the shapeliness will tell you what the endocrine system is. And it's almost a direct index on the second dynamic. Now, this is just surface look. You can call it inventory if you want to, but it's just a surface look. All right. Remember to be sensible at this stage. Very sensible. It's not esoteric at all. Just take the glasses. The locks that go with that is, when has he tried to keep people from looking? Either start or stop or change. Keep people from looking or make them look. Ending in failure. Every one of you hit on these, he'll fix up his own glasses. Now that's glasses. It's start, stop, change on the subject of looking. Third dynamic. That's what you aim for. Bing. Stomach. Eating. Obvious, isn't it? Start, stop, change on eating. Third dynamic. When has he tried to make others start, stop, or change on the subject of eating? Let's just pick up the 5 or 6 billion locks for the food. Because that's going to influence the individual, you see. You know that those locks are there. They're very heavily there because they're obviously reflected on his own being. All right, now, let's look at a girl whose endocrine system is even faintly out of line. And, of course, it's very obvious what you're trying to pick up there. You're trying to pick up time when she has done start, stop, change on the subject of sex. On the third, really the second dynamic, but I'm talking about people. You'll find out that it is not just simply restraining somebody from attacking her. The other lock, mild. Wanted her sister to look better so she'd be more attractive to the boyfriend because they were going to fall apart. Didn't succeed in making her look better. Didn't succeed in making herself look better. You get the interlock. Tried to force Mama to buy her dresses to make her attractive to boys. Failed. You get the combination there. It's anything that would tie in to the attractiveness of a woman or a man on the second dynamic. Would cancel it out, enhance it, the effort of the person, cancel out other people's attractiveness, to enhance other people's attractiveness, so forth. Let's just keep it out there on the third dynamic. Now, it's good and safe for your pre-clear to work on the third dynamic. It's too darn close to home, ordinarily, to work on the first. You get the idea. Let's have him start and stop and change other people. Here's his control of his environment. Let's deal with other people for a moment. All right. Let's take something like arthritis. What's he trying to do? What has he been trying to do to people on arthritis? Very, very simple, isn't it? You know arthritis is holding. Your tone scale is very good on this, behavior and physiology. It's a holding disease. He's trying to hold motion. He's trying to damp out motion. So let's get all the time that he tried to stamp motion out in his environment. When did he try to stamp motion out in his environment? Who used to do things that annoyed him and so forth? By the way, first thing you know, you'll start scanning through this stuff more or less automatically, just be all over the track as it starts coming through too fast. When has he tried to damp out motion? You take those off, it's the first locks that come off. They're very easy to get, very easy to get. Next thing you know, you'll be getting the moments when he decided to take that. Now you'll have him looking. By the time you have done an endocrine setup or one of these other obvious errors, you figure out about what that error is and figure out how he got wished the error on himself by wishing it on other people. What kind of an error was it that he was wishing on somebody else that backfired and caught him? You get the idea. All you have to do is make an estimate of that. That's a diagnosis. Now your next trick, and this trick can go along almost any time, is you start working to restore his belief in his self-determinism. But the chances are you won't get a chance, because this guy will be going like a dog after a rabbit right about that time. He'll have struck something that looks funny to him. And you should really do this until he hits something that looks strange to him in his life. Let him find it. And that's a very important step in this process. You work him on this other stuff. You try to rehabilitate his self-determinism. You work this way and that. But you keep working him in the straightest there that I've given you so far until he sees he smells a mouse. Somewhere along the line, this guy is going to say, you know, that's a funny thing. I'm very afraid that you're going to get up and leave, Peculiar. You see, you've already got the thing triggered. If he recognizes there's something funny about it, you've already got that funny item coming through. He knows there's something strange. He suddenly realizes, say, you know, every time I sit down at the table, I always hesitate before I pick up my knife. Well, now, it's not time for you to go dashing off to something else. Nor really is it time for you to jump in about knives. What you want to do is remember this mechanism. That a pre-clear who is rationalizing, and that's all he's doing, rationalizing, is rationalizing on the furthest perimeter from the actuality. The hypnotist makes him take his coat off and put it back on by touching his tie. The preacher will begin to find something wrong with the room. Then he'll begin to find something wrong with the guy. Then he'll begin to find something wrong with the guy's clothes. And all of a sudden, at last, he will say tie. And the moment that he gets to the tie angle, the post-hypnotic suggestion springs. You want to remember this, that mode of operation and that perimeter. When he says, it's a funny thing, but I win just because I'm trying to knives. I don't like knives. You know, I just realized the sound of silverware is very antipathetic. And you say, well, let's pick up something about the parents. Let's pick up about people he's had to eat with. That's your subject. You get the generalized subject on the particularized item which he hits. And he'll climb around on this subject for a little while, and he'll say, you know, I don't like tablecloths either. And you let him climb around on this. We start and stop change on the subject of, not tablecloths still, but dining rooms. Or people eating, people in restaurants eating, if you want to really take it away from home. He'll gradually come back in, and he will inform you out of the depths of his suddenly acquired knowledge. Always let him do the informing to you. You know, I hated to eat with my parents. And you say with great surprise, yes? I've been waiting this for a long time, you see. And he says, I hated to eat with them. And you say, well, let's get a time when you made some decision with regard to their eating. Might he make a decision with regard to their eating?
Well, I didn't do anything like that.
Well, there's some decision you might have made with regard to their eating. Did you ever make a decision with regard to their eating? Yeah, I wish they'd be quiet. And all of a sudden, we find out that this guy, unbeknownst to himself or anything else, was barked at about his table manners, year in, year out, nag, 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 and all of a sudden he finds out that there were two other members of the household that he'd forgotten about, that his position at the table was so-and-so, he'd forgotten about this, and all of a sudden, you can expect about the time he starts to get into the core of the whole matter for him to trigger an N-theta facsimile. And this will probably happen before he gets into the core of the whole matter. You'll run him that far, and all of a sudden you'll find him getting into an N-theta facsimile of one sort or another. Now, his effort processing. Now, give him effort processing. I'm not talking now about a psychotic or a severely neurotic individual. I'm just talking about a normal. When I'm talking about this rule procedure. Here we have hit on a computation which he made probably in the depths of unconsciousness or a struggle or something of the sort. He's made some sort of approximate. We could fully expect to run into a past death at that moment. He'll start asking a question. He'll start telling you that there's a missing incident. There's something missing in his life. There's something happened in his life. He'll say, it must have been here. It must have been there. No, it must have been someplace else. And you as an auditor can keep him picking up locks on allied subjects until you finally trigger. He'll notice something strange, but as a little boy, he liked to ride in cars, but he finds himself at 14 hating to ride. All of a sudden he says, you know, there must be an automobile accident in here somewhere. Sure there is. You say, well, are there any later automobile accidents? Oh, yeah, several of those. Yeah, I got those. Early ones? Maybe I fell out of a crib or a baby buggy or something. I'm not sure what I... Oh, it must be an automobile accident here when I'm about 11. Yeah, it must be. And Lee wanders around. You say, well, now, let's go over some times when you tried to stop cars or something of that sort. No, he probably won't have anything to you by this time. He's off like a rocket. All of a sudden, we discover it's 10, and we discover it's an accident, all right. He walked out into the middle of the street and hit the car. And all the rest of his life, this datum, single datum, has been missing. He's kept it missing. And you know what else we'll find? We'll find out that he has used the devil out of it, only we don't tell him so. He has just used the dickens out of this N theta facsimile. He hid it from everybody, but you'll generally find out that that facsimile was invalidated to him. The missing center on his case, if there is one, that have all been like that. Somebody said it wasn't serious, it didn't happen, or it was your fault. Somebody said this to him. Somebody argued with him, and he had to keep putting forward this facsimile. He kept putting it forward. His best way to put it forward is to demonstrate it and try it on his own body. He'll say, the back of my neck. You'll find then that somebody, maybe he went home, maybe he had this horrible thing happen to him. He got bunged up, he went home, he said to Mama, I got hit by an automobile. I don't see anything wrong with you. Another one of those wild tales. Back of his neck happens to be hurt a little bit at that moment. He was probably jarred. You'll find then, maybe a few weeks later, he'll be coming around and explaining how he just fell off the back fence and hurt the back of his neck. Well, Mama believes it. Does nothing. You'll find his concept of what he tells the world has happened to him will go off at that moment, too. Now, this is just one type of computation. There are many such types. But it gives you an idea of what to look for. The stuff that you're really looking for on the case has these characteristics. It's not obvious. The preclear at this time is evidently not conscious of it. It is manifesting itself as a psychosomatic illness. The M theta facsimile of necessity had to be offered because of invalidation. And it created a pattern reaction. He used it as a pattern reaction from that time henceforward. And it's not necessarily down there in infinite. If you can get this one, you've got to work all the effort out of it, probably. And you start working all the effort out of it, you're going to have quite a job in your hands because there's postulates in there to make him hold on to it. But he's made postulates himself. He'll tug away and try to work with these postulates and so on. And it will be a great temptation to you as an auditor not to follow this kind of a rope, but just gunshot it. And once you've hit the N theta facsimile, not to exhaust it all the way. Because, boy, some of those will really try your patience. Hour after hour after hour. It may take you 10, 15 hours of auditing to knock out the central N theta facsimile which the individual has been using in this life. But what you're trying to do is pick up the service unit, the service facsimile, and you can just call it that, and it'll keep you oriented on what's going on and what you're trying to do. There may be one and there may be five, but I'll guarantee you when you've got that one or five of them, no worries about it. You see, the whole reason then that you can then sweep the case, you can knock out conclusions, you can do all sorts of things. You'll find this person is ably moving on the track by the time you've done this. No great trouble to it. It does not matter to you how occluded a case is, because that occlusion just says he's probably sitting in the middle of this N theta facsimile. And he's just blacked out at that point. So his perceptics are off. You start turning on his reality, and you work those things on, well, what is your effort to have this? What is your effort not to have this? What is your effort to do this? What is your effort to do that? What is your effort to have affinity for this? And what is your effort to disagree with it? What is your effort not to agree with it, or to agree with it? So on. What is your effort to stay there? What is your effort to go away? What are you thinking about at the moment? And you just keep this up. But you can keep this up very well. After you've asked a few questions, the file clerk gets the hang of it. You can start getting this whole stuff on the file clerk's responses. And the guy will push them this way and pull them that way and so on. You'd be surprised how much effort you'll find on one of these service facsimiles. You'll be amazed. You can drain them and drain them and drain them. Definitely. Very funny thing. You may find yourself working a past debt. And it may occur to you that this is it. No, it's not. There's lots of past debts in it. But out of that past debt, this one may spring up. And what you want is the service facsimile. It doesn't matter where it is on the track, it'll leave up. He may have been using that past debt as the service facsimile, but there's also a trigger facsimile up the track in this life that's hung up with that past debt. You'll find him out of valence and all everything else. You'll find a lot of emotional stress around the incident, and you'll find a lot of recomputations coming out of it. And generally, what you will mainly find at that point is his recognition or his feeling that he needs a lower velocity. And he accepts a lower velocity from life. He is less dangerous to his environment. He begins to handle his environment differently. But there'll be a shift in action. Now, when you've exhausted one or more service facsimiles off the case, you then should be able to just swamp out the rest of the conclusions. You'll probably find some more service facsimiles, but they'll be minor. Now, I give you this as a means of busting cases, because I've been busting cases with it. Furthermore, it figures. It figures. You see, it's very non-survival to live on your past computations. You know the basic reason why? It's because the past environment has kept shifting, and your past environment is not your present environment. The organism which cannot shift and change to adjust itself to and adjust the environment to it is non-survival. And one's conclusions are always in another environment than one is in. So it's very non-survival to compute what one does now by what one has been doing over the past 25 years. What you would do for the individual is free up all of his reasoning all the way along the line so that all of his data. Therefore, with every computation and decision, there is the reason why. Why'd you do it? What's the reason? You know the reason for that. It's better auditor parlance. Now, you see what I mean when I say that you're trying to give him his chance. Once upon a time, he didn't get his chance. And he's been using an N-theta facsimile ever since to explain that he was right. Service facsimiles normally contain flagrant injustices. They are not rational in their computations. They go in one way and come out another way, and the guy won't reconcile them. They don't figure. They just don't compute. And there's a false point on the computation of the thing. There's probably emotion on the thing. But they've probably been around for so darn long that they're pretty hard for you to exhaust. Now, you want to know how long I think it would take for you to get up a chronic somatic thoroughly, turn on eyesight very thoroughly, get rid of arthritis thoroughly, using this process, which we just call foundation procedure as of October. The thing that you do as an auditor is you're at last giving him a chance to tell his side of it. You're agreeing with him, it's pretty fair. And then you get rid of the facsimile part. And he'll come out walking straight up. There are probably several of these facsimiles kicking around in any person's life that he's had to use, that have been invalidated, that he's had to keep in order to invalidate other people. Very lousy sort of computation. But there is the anatomy of a computation. And there is a procedure to overcome it. If you could simply find, without any further to-do, ways and means for a guy to bring his speed up so that he would no longer echo across the lower bands and so be able to touch these N-theta facsimiles. You got it whipped right there. An individual who is in an environment which is attempting to slow him down and tells him, slow down, and does this to him and that to him, so on, will eventually slow down to the speed of the N-theta facsimile. And he'll start picking them up in order to re-invalidate the environment. He'll start picking up these N-theta facsimiles as he goes down the concept. And he'll get worse and worse. An individual environment that is trying to speed him up continually, send him on up the other side, will do the same thing. gradually, you try to come up, and you eventually hit down level and start to stop. So, but what do we mean right there when we say speed him up? And yet we know that's exactly what's happening. He all of a sudden goes into a job of driving trucks to some truck company, and the dispatcher is always telling him, speed up, speed up, speed up, speed up, speed up. All of a sudden one day, unhappy, he's sick. Well, he's had to choose another speed to make the dispatcher wrong. He's had to choose a different speed to invalidate the dispatcher. And the way he chose a different speed has step one, unknown, step two, selection of an end plate facsimile. Now this unknown step, we do know something about it. You can call that the governor. How fast does the guy run? What is the mechanism by which one chooses one's own speed on the call? I'll leave that up to you. I'm sure you'll find it in a precept. I don't know whether you use the words abracadabra or fusilla or whether or not you tickle the soles of his feet in order to get it speeded or what. I don't know. But I know it's there because there's stage one, running at a chosen velocity in good shape. Two, demonstration from the environment, an effort to alter self-determined velocity with step three, choice through self-determinism by the individual to select n theta facsimiles to cancel out first the factor that's trying to alter his speed in the environment. Failure, kick back on self because it kicks back on all of the next. That is the anatomy of re-stimulation, decline on the tone scale. You as an auditor repair it the other way. The missing link right there, we call it self-determinism, but it has self-determinism directed in a very mechanical direction. What is this thing we're calling speed inside the individual? It isn't that he has to walk faster or walk slower. It isn't that his heart is speeding up or his heart is slowing down. But there's been some essential part, and it'll be physical, some essential part of his physical being is affected. And he has control of it, but through the receipt of engrams, that is, through choosing n theta facsimiles in the first place and having them fail him, he gets this mechanism included. But I am sure that in his native state, and without that thing included, he just does it at will. Well, I think I'll be happy. Well, I think I'll be energetic. Now I'm going to be, just automatic response. He runs an undertaking parlor, very sad all day. People come in, very sad. Doesn't choose any unsafe facsimiles at all. He's just very sad and very sympathetic. Yeah, too bad, dear dead departed. Yes, we cut him up and poured formaldehyde in him, and the bill was $985. And then goes out to the amusement park with a kid. Well, now, you see, it's very funny. It isn't the speed of the kid that is affecting him directly. This is one of the stimulus-response mechanisms that psychology went on the rocks of. Everything is stimulus-response. Nothing is really self-determined. Everything is action-reaction, action-reaction, action-reaction. That is just not functional. We fell into the same trap in the early days of Dianetics. He goes out with his kid. Now, what do the kids do? He looks at the kid. This does something to him. I mean, he isn't directly physically affected, but there are the kids. He decides that in the presence of these kids, he is going to be happy and energetic. Then what does he do? Is it this tempo or? Yeah. But all of a sudden, he's happy and energetic, and he likes the kids. But you see, he can choose a flock of n theta facsimiles to tell him he doesn't like kids. So now he slows his speed down. Be quiet, children. Do this, do that, run. He's on charge. Now, I think that we have gone over this very, very thoroughly. Time for you to get your hands full of freeware. See if you can find one of these central com cubes. The way to find it is just to start and stop lock. One right after the other. Start and stop lock. Start and stop doing anything until you finally get this guy triggered and all of a sudden he's going to run into something that's blank. You'll find out there's something blank, and he'll tell you it's blank. But as a foundation auditor, you should be very busy on a pre-clear. No boil off. Don't let them boil off. No good. Work them Work them pretty hard. Work them interestedly. But you'll find out that once the guy's got the hang of effort, he's liable to sit there and run efforts, and run efforts, and run efforts, and run efforts without any great aid from you, but you better keep him checked up on. Okay, take a break till 3 o'clock tomorrow.